Welcome to Healer, Heal Yourself, Reduce Burnout, Discover Your Creativity While You Heal Others. Today I have Dr. Adina Blickstein, and she's a physician, a psychiatrist in private practice in New York. And welcome, Adina. How are you doing
today? Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I love creativity and doctoring and the mix.
Well, that's nice that you're able to combine the two, because a lot of people find it difficult. So what makes you a creative person?
I always I like to create different types of healing modalities that incorporate performing arts, because I love comedy. I love dancing. I love singing, and I love writing. I love writing raps. That's my thing.
Mm-hmm. So I know that that you've written a rap song, and we can probably have you perform that later on in our talk. Sure. But I was wondering what you were like as a kid when you were growing up. Were you always creative? Did you consider yourself creative?
I was always dancing. I was a big, big dancer. Every day. I did ballet. I did hip hop. I did jazz. I studied musical theater. I took voice lessons. I drew. So I was always involved in the performing arts and in plays and shows and performances.
Did your parents encourage this? I'm imagining. Yeah.
My parents always encouraged it, but they said, not as a profession. That's not how you earn a living.
Okay. And so did they want you to go to medical school, or was this a calling for you?
Medical school was definitely not a calling for me.
Okay.
It was something that I felt I felt was a good idea, because there was community role modeling.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up Orthodox Jewish, so it was like, you want to be a doctor or a doctor? Make a choice. So I felt that it was something that would be a good idea, but I always left my options open at every step of the way. I was always interested in psychology, but I applied to medical school, and I got into medical school, and I also got into degrees in psychology. And I asked my parents, what do you think I should do? And they're like, well, if you do medical school, you can be a psychiatrist, which would incorporate psychology. But if you go just for your degree in psychology, you don't have that option of being a doctor, if that's what you want. So I'm like, okay, makes sense. So I went through the medical route, and now I'm a psychiatrist.
Yeah. So you knew from the very beginning that you wanted to be a psychiatrist.
I don't think so. I knew I wanted to work with children.
Okay.
And I knew I wanted to work in a creative way.
Mm-hmm.
I was also very interested in pediatrics and family medicine. And I found my way through my passions in child adolescent psychiatry, which I think was a great, great choice for me.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of took it step by step. I didn't come into medical school knowing I'm going to end up as a child psychiatrist.
The reason I said that is because you were thinking psychology versus medical school, or PhD versus medical school. So
right.
You had an interest in psychology, I guess.
I always had an interest in psychology. My BA was in psychology. But when I started medical school, I had became interested in a lot of other things. So when I started medical school, I said, wow, family medicine sounds amazing, and pediatrics sounds amazing, because I love working with children. And then to be a child adolescent psychiatrist, I had to do adult psychiatry also, which was very challenging for me, because it wasn't as playful as I would have liked. It can be.
Yeah.
But it's difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people don't experience child psychiatry while they're in med school. You know, we usually do adult rotations, and then maybe if you're lucky, you can do a child rotation for a brief period of time.
Yeah. that's a loss. I think it's important to be exposed, because when you understand child psychiatry, you understand adults much better.
Right. And I think it makes you a better psychiatrist if you're looking at people developmentally, right? You're looking at the spectrum rather than just an isolated part of their lives. So you also did things that were creative in medical school. Were you active?
Yeah, during my medical school career, I was running on the side. I was running a production company.
Okay.
And we produced shows for women-only audiences.
Okay.
I founded it in Israel, and we had something called Wanna Be a Star.
Nice.
So it was modeled after the American Idol-styled show, but we produced it in Israel. And the unique value of our programming was that the audiences were women-only. So women felt very free to be expressive and perform. Mm-hmm. So that actually lasted about 5 or 6 years. And I was doing it while I was studying.
That's fantastic. Do you have any stories from that time? Like, is there a scenario that stands out to you?
Yeah, we produced a show that we partnered with another company that got monologues, real writings from women's stories. And we had someone who was in a domestic violence relationship. We had a woman who was a cancer survivor. We had a woman whose daughter was using drugs. We had all different types of stories. And our job as the company, we brought actresses to act out the monologues, act out the scripted monologues.
Mm-hmm.
And we produced this show in the Old City in Jerusalem, in this alleyway with a bar on the side. And we had trained the actresses. We worked with the actresses to really embody those stories. And it was so powerful. It was incredibly powerful.
Wow. And did that just dissolve after medical school, or has somebody carried on the torch?
So I did have a team that was working together with me. And I relocated to the States for residency. And my partner in the company actually spearheaded a podcast or radio show
mm-hmm.
called Spotlight on Women. And she started interviewing women performers that became its own radio show. And I wasn't actively involved in Israel, but the momentum continued. And then a lot of other different projects for women only audiences kind of happened there and mm-hmm. in different locations. So now it's a phenomenon. When I started it, it wasn't a thing, but now it's a thing. So, and then when I came back to the US, I actually started an incubator for women performers. We had a year-long incubator mentorship type of program.
Mm. So it sounds like you were living in Israel. Were you born and raised in Israel?
I was born and raised here. And then when I graduated college, I moved to Israel. I wasn't sure whether I wanted to do a master's in psychology or go to medical school, but I opted to go to medical school in Israel. And then I lived there for about 6 or 7 years. I had my kids there. I did research. I did medical school. And then when I graduated, I came back to the U.S.
Oh, wow. Wonderful. You know, what you just described reminds me of the vagina monologues. Is there any similarity?
Yeah, I think there was a similarity there. Our target audience were Orthodox Jewish women.
Mm.
And because I grew up Orthodox, mm-hmm. there are rules governing how and when a woman could perform for men or in a public audience.
Mm-hmm.
And there are restrictions. And many women feel really suppressed and repressed by those restrictions. I for sure felt that way. So I wanted to offer a forum where women could feel safe and comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really the impetus for the project.
Did you have to do it in secret?
No. Okay. So long as it was public, meaning women could come and perform for women and their husbands would be okay with that within the community because it was women. But the performing arts within the Orthodox community was non-existent.
Right.
Until I think I was one of the stewards of catalyzing women's only audience movement because women thought it was impossible. If we can't perform, we can't perform, but you can, you know.
Sounds like you were a little bit of a rebel, maybe.
I was a rebel. And then when I realized later on, many years later, I don't really connect with this community. I don't really subscribe. I don't really feel that this is who I am. I left it entirely and now I perform for anyone.
Yeah.
Which is something I couldn't really come to at that point.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready. I wasn't evolved enough, but I only came out of the Orthodox closet about 4 years ago.
Yeah, that must have been really tough, I would imagine.
Yeah, it was very much attached to my identity. Mm-hmm. I was very, very passionate about living an Orthodox lifestyle. Extremely mm-hmm. passionate about it. And then I had a spiritual awakening in 2020. In the midst
Tell us
of
about that. What happened?
Yeah, so I got divorced in about 2016 in the middle of my internship. And thereafter, I realized that I wasn't really subscribing to Orthodoxy, but I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I wasn't, but I didn't know who I was. So I was just doing the motions. I was just going to the synagogue, doing all the holidays and things like that. But I didn't really have my own identity as who I am and what I stand for. And I was doing my child adolescent fellowship. And I remember feeling really exhausted one morning. I felt exhausted many mornings, but this particular morning, I was planning to meet my team in the pediatric ICU. This was a very, very difficult time. I was managing post-suicide attempts daily in the midst of COVID when the children were in school, were at home learning. And I would be rotating in the PICU, in the pediatric ICU, just seeing cases after case of attempts.
Suicide
attempts and counseling the families. And so this particular morning, I went to meet my team, but I couldn't. I was texting and nobody was returning my texts. And I had been seeking. I had been seeking answers. I was just very disillusioned with what was going on in my life, in my career. And I knew I wanted to offer something and offer children something. But I needed direction because what I was doing was not what I wanted to be doing. And so I sought help. I sought spiritual guidance. I met with a woman who channels the day before. And so I was kind of, I wrote a letter to the universe. I'm like, please give me direction. Please give me some help. I need some guidance. And so that morning I saw a sign where the PICU was to the left and the chapel was to the right. And I was still texting my team to find out where they were. And I started heading towards the PICU. And I got this intuition where I said, I'm done. I'm turning around. And I headed towards the chapel. It was just this feeling. And I was really had a headache and I was fatigued. And I'm just like, I was kind of surrendering. I'm not chasing. They'll find me when they'll find me. It'll work out, but I'm going to the chapel. And my intention was, I guess, just to rest and relax and kind of calm myself down. And I walked into the chapel of the hospital and it was just so calm immediately. It was completely serene. The energy outside was very different than the energy inside. It was just this peace. And I sat there for a couple of minutes in silence, no distraction, and in complete surrender. And I heard a voice. It wasn't outside of me. It was an inner voice, but it was very clear. and it said, "Welcome to your team." And essentially, it was my spiritual team. It was my angel guides or higher beings that came to connect with me.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that they're always around, but we are the ones distracted and kind of not tuning in. But at that moment, I was very tuned in and I got all of this information, just tons of information about purpose. And it came just as like a loving, supportive energy. Different types of beings communicating different messages of love and support. And direction about what is needed on the planet, what's happening on the planet, what the children are going through, what the children need. But it didn't all come at once because it was a lot. So after that episode, someone had told me the day before that channels start by writing, by recording what they get, the information they get. So I was sitting there and I was just writing down what was given to me. The information that was given to me. And it was beautiful, very, very positive. You are blessed. You are loved. We're all here to support you. We all want the best for you. We all are guiding you. When I left that chapel, I was in a weird state. I was in a very strange state because I felt like my energy was almost outside of my body. And I also hadn't been feeling that so well that morning. I was really tired. But my plan was just to go back to my office and continue my work. So I went towards my office. I left the chapel and went towards my office. And my supervisor looked at me and saw that I was a little washed out, a little pale. And she said, "Go to the emergency room immediately to get checked for COVID," because she was freaking out. And this was in the midst of everything. So I went to the emergency room. And they did everything. I was fine. I didn't have COVID, but they gave me some fluids. But as I was lying down on the bed, the voices of the inner voices came back and said, "There's a lot of information we need to be giving to you now. You need time to rest. You're going to get some time off. You're going to get some time off." And then the second that I heard that, my supervisor said, "Why don't you take some time off?"
Really?
"Why don't you take some time off? Take a couple of days to rest." Because I was like, okay.
Yeah.
The next 5 days, I was intensively channeling for I don't know how long it lasted in linear time, but I went to my parents' house, and for that week, I got a lot of information about the company that I'm now running and the ideas and the principles about what needs to happen now on the planet came to me, but have taken. It was almost like a 50-year business plan that came to me in visions within 3 days. And then I'm realizing this is a lot to do. And it took a lot of time to get to that ultimate vision. But that was my spiritual experience. And then in the next 2 to 3 years, the process for me was healing the pain body, healing the trauma of being indoctrinated, healing the transgenerational trauma of parents being Holocaust survivors, healing and stepping into my own personal power and divine femininity. But once I got that awakening, I was almost had a psychedelic experience or experience, an out-of-body experience. That's when I started realizing that everything that I was indoctrinated with was not my truth. My truth is my inner intuition. I have support all the time. I have guides all the time. I don't need to depend on doctrine. I don't need to depend on dogma. And it's not to say I don't enjoy positive, uplifting communal experiences. I love being part of any positive, uplifting communal experience, which religion creates, and community is critical. But I started realizing that I needed to carve my own path that was totally separate from where I came from. And it was extremely painful and extremely isolating, especially given the times in terms of it was basically in the middle of isolation. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very, very difficult and very painful.
Wow. It sounds intense and life changing too.
Yeah. the whole world was changing. I really went through a dark night, mm-hmm. a dark night of the soul. Right. After I graduated residency, a couple of months later, after that awakening, it became increasingly harder and harder to be in the environment I was in. I became very psychic. I became very sensitive. I had premonitions. I was intuiting things about patients that my superiors really didn't understand. And I was just tapping into certain energies that I didn't have access to because I had been closed. And it got me in trouble because I started seeing the illusion of much of what we do within psychiatry. And I confronted it. And I think I wasn't grounded enough to realize that people are not where you are. And I just had this spiritual awakening and I wasn't sensitive to the people around me that didn't necessarily feel the same way as me. Mm-hmm. But it just got increasingly harder and harder to be in a system that I felt wasn't particularly doing justice to its constituents. And I started seeing it clearly. Uh-huh. I wasn't able to see it before because I was kind of unconscious. Yeah, I was totally conditioned. So this way was the way. And then as I started opening up and becoming more aware and becoming more energetically connected and doing, I would do, I'd start to feel energy. I would start to feel my own energy and be able to align my own energy. But I also started becoming extremely sensitive. I mean, I would feel so much more than I felt before. And as a result, I got sick. I got ill. I had GI bleeding. I had upper and lower inflammation. Mm-hmm. And then my adrenals, you know, were out of control and my sugars were all out of control. And so my body became very imbalanced because I really didn't have the grounding skills and nobody really understood what I was going through and nobody could teach me how to proceed. And so I was kind of on my own on this journey. I did have doctor.
Okay. Go ahead.
I did have one doctor who I named Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. Was my rock and who totally understood what I was going through and normalized it and didn't call me crazy and just was a real mentor on this ascension journey. And we were helping each other also, you know, pull out of our traumas. But by the time I graduated, I was so sick. I wasn't just physically sick. I was emotionally sick and totally burnt out from seeing these suicidal children. I became suicidal, but I know that it was also because of what I was being exposed to every day. And I didn't have support. I believe I had a therapist, but with my own, the structure that I was in, the educational system that I was in offered very little support for its residents, right. Especially during COVID where everybody was just completely, totally scared. And it was just a very difficult time. So by the time I graduated, I was done with everything. I wanted to throw out my degree. I wanted to rip it up. Mm-hmm. I was like, this wasn't worth it. This was terrible. If I didn't feel so sick, I think I would have been grateful. But I knew that I got sick from the work.
Well, it was traumatic work.
And it caused me to be ill. And because of that, I had so much hate and resentment, even though I had reached such a milestone.
Yeah.
And I couldn't work. I couldn't throw myself back into work again. I'm like, I just can't do this. And I felt really trapped. Like I had put 15 years into becoming a child adolescent psychiatrist or becoming a doctor. And I felt like I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it at all. And it took many, many months I think I had PTSD along with all the medical stuff. It was very, very, very scary. I couldn't really think so much. Like the brain gut connection was, I was in acute pain. I couldn't eat well because I was just inflamed.
And you had been divorced too, right?
I was a single parent.
Single mom, and you were resident, and it was COVID, and you had people dying around you. This is like being in a war zone.
It was totally a war zone. It was absolutely a war zone. The way I explain to people my experience is as if I was dealing with soldiers after a battle, but it was children. And so when I saw the children, they were zombies. The children would just stare at me, child after child, totally zombies. And this is what I was exposed to. It was just nothing and alive. It was very traumatic. You know, people say the trauma of COVID, it was like the physical stuff, physical being in an ICU, which was traumatic. But the trauma that I was exposed to was just mental, right? It was like no inside, like healthy, like functioning, breathing, but just like zombies. It was terrible.
I can imagine. And I want to know what it was like to go home to your kids.
Yeah. My children.
How old were they at the time?
At the time. So they were 9 and 7 until for 3 years thereafter. So 9, 10, 11. So 9, 10, 11, 7, 8, 9. I think I really did an amazing job at protecting them for myself and with my parents' help. When I was doing that, when they only didn't have school for 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
Both their schools had full-time school after that first 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I took a vacation, or they gave me a research month for the first 2 months of that 4 months. And the next 2 months they were with my parents, and then they went into the summer. So I knew I was having a difficult time at work, but I worked very, very hard to be really attentive to the children. How are you feeling? My son was having nightmares, depression, insomnia, but I feel like I was able to be there for them. And that wasn't really, I don't feel like they had so much trauma from COVID itself.
Mm-hmm.
It was more that my ex and I were on different pages, different ends of the spectrum in the debate. That was more traumatic for them. But I am very impressed with the resilience of my children in a lot of respects. And their schools also really made an effort to be there.
Mm-hmm.
They
remained in the community, though, right? They remained.
Yes, I left the community, but they have always been in the community and still are in the community. And I actually was living in the community until 2 months ago.
Okay.
So even though I wasn't practicing, I was still in the same place as the community.
Yeah.
So they have had relative stability,
mm-hmm.
which has been great. And I also have a lot of skills from the work to be able to hold them in their emotional spaces. But the biggest work that I've done for them is my own personal healing. Mm-hmm. It's not the intellectual education that I got as a resident. It's my own personal healing enabled me to hold more and more space for them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't know the suffering that a lot of doctors go through, you know, and it's hard to describe. The spiritual awakening that you had, there are a lot of people who have described these as downloads. Now, there are a lot of psychiatrists who wouldn't understand this and may have said that you were manic or psychotic at the time. And I'm sure this happens to a lot of people in general. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. And I will explain like very, very clearly, because I have done a lot of research and reading about this. And part of my experience was, am I manic? Am I psychotic? So I do want to describe the difference very, very clearly to people. First and foremost, we are multidimensional light beings in a physical form. So our physical body is a container for our energy. And if we choose to, through meditation and transcendental experiences, always go up to higher realms of consciousness at any point in time. However, if we don't have good ego strength, which means we don't know who we are and feel confident in who we are, and or we don't know how to bring ourselves back onto the earth plane, we can lose our contact with reality and becomes psychotic, which is going in another realm, going somewhere else, and not having any sense of where we are in this time, space, linear 3D reality. And that's essentially psychosis. Psychosis is not the idea of being in different realms and being on different planes, but the loss of connection and contact with time, space, not knowing where you are, thinking you're a child and you're an adult, thinking that you are the president and you're not. But that's a loss of reality testing, which defines psychosis. Mm-hmm. The extrasensory experiences happen all the time to people that are not psychotic. Mm-hmm. And they should be happening. If we're open spiritual beings, we should be having extrasensory experiences because we are extrasensory beings. We are not just confined by the senses of our body. So people who don't understand this concept and can't differentiate between psychosis and spirituality, and that we are spiritual beings in physical bodies, and we have intuitive senses, we have clairsentience, we have clairvoyance, that is not psychosis. Mm-hmm. Now, the other difference is the negative and the positive, right? Can tuning into our inner voice, tuning into our light beings and our guides, are not psychotic experiences. We all have little whispers of positivity that we should be paying attention to. It's our guiding force, whether it's internal or coming from a being. We are guided by non-physical beings that are generally very, very positive. When a person starts hearing command auditory hallucinations telling them to kill themselves, it's more likely to be psychotic because of the nature that it's very, very negative. Mm-hmm. And that's when it becomes dangerous. Mm-hmm. So the content is critical because the content is also a reflection of mood and thought disorders. So if you are in a meditative space and you hear positive voices that are encouraging you to progress in life, that's wonderful. If you are stressed and you hear negative voices telling you to kill yourself, that requires emergency psychiatric intervention, especially if there's no insight, especially if they're going to just listen blindly. So yes, this is an important distinction. And for psychiatrists or any mental health professional to ride people off who are on an ascension journey is really suppressing, you know, the evolution of humanity and not really fully understanding what human beings are about and why we're even here. Mm-hmm. And yes, I agree, it happens a lot. But when a person's having acute psychotic breaks or acute manic breaks, much of it has to do with also childhood trauma in which they can't ground. They can't get back and ground.
Or they've never been grounded. Yeah.
They've never been grounded. So they have not had ego strength. This ego strength is developed through transactions, through parent-child and caregiver transactions. And many people who have severe mental illness have also acute and chronic childhood trauma in which they do not have strong ego strength. And so when they dysregulate, they really lose contact with reality, as opposed to someone who has strong ego strength and they get emotionally dysregulated. They can pull back to ground. They could center themselves and they could have the confidence to know that they can regulate. So there's a huge correlation. And I see that in the emergency room all the time.
I know. It's an important conversation to have. And I think that culturally, there are many cultures that accept this as the norm. And we have to remember that, especially as being psychiatrists, that when you hear stories like this, you have to also, you know, think about the cultural background of the individual and the meaning behind it, and really explore what their thinking is, not just to prescribe a med.
Right. So, I think that's why clinical discernment is important, and not like relying on DSM criteria or someone has to intuitively feel the person, and to be able to make that distinction. And I think that psychiatrists who go through their own healing journeys, mm-hmm. or any mental health professional that has really, really dug deep to heal themselves, will naturally more intuitively understand who they're trying to heal and help them better.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to say how we met. We met recently at a conference, an integrative psychiatry conference. So tell me what drew you to integrative psychiatry. I think it's pretty obvious, but.
I found the conference great at the Integrative Psychiatric Institute. That was my first event with them, but it appears that they have people that are more open-minded to spirituality and are using alternative methods to heal as opposed to simply to pharmacotherapy, which I'm not against. I don't feel like we shouldn't have meds. I do think there's a balance with everything. Yes, and I was interested in hearing more and exploring and meeting like-minded professionals.
Yeah. And so how do you use integrative psychiatry in your practice?
So I have focused my practice on healing the family as a whole. Mm-hmm. So when a child is brought to my attention, I really don't focus on the child as much as I focus on the parents. Mm-hmm. And so I put the parents into my 6-week training, parent training, in which I utilize parenting effectiveness training, PET, which is a modality that was established by Thomas Gordon many years ago, over 50 years ago, which has proven effective. And I might or might not start medication depending on how urgent the situation is, but it has proven that, and through my surveys too, that parent confidence improves, child anxiety and depression decrease. And my goal is that there's more familial coherence. Mm-hmm. That's how I work now with children. And you could call that integrative psychiatry. I think there's a lot of meanings to the word integrative. Mm-hmm. For me, my approach is the entire family and the flow of energy and authentic relating through each member of the family. Mm-hmm. So I focus on honest communication, emotional communication. I encourage parents to share their anger with their kids and how to share their anger. I encourage, you know, active listening and use the methodologies of PET. And then I also have a conscious provider referral network, which is right now we have 13 providers in our network, but it's rapidly growing. And they're different modalities of care. We have naturopaths, chiropractors, nutritionists, energy healers. We have psychologists. We have family constellations. We have a lot of different types of modalities. So part of me servicing the family is resourcing every single member with care that they need. So that's also part of my approach.
Excellent. So let's move on to some of the creative things that you do. One of those things is wrapping. Do you want to talk about that, how it started?
Sure. So when I had patients, I used to write the stories of the patients after seeing them, just to be able to let it out and let my feelings out and just write everything on the page. And I would review these writings over and over again and kind of fine tune them. And then
It was just on my phone. It was not really the story.
It was how I interpreted it.
Impressions.
Yeah. I would just write it out like freestyle, freeform. And then I would go over it and it would always make me feel very soothed to like read what I had written. It was almost like emotionally processing everything I had seen. And then I started putting songs or beats. I started putting beats behind the writing, and I have so many pieces of writing now. I have such a collection of poetry and poetry raps, and I've been in a performance. It was an art gallery that I also drew, and I connected every piece of art to the poem too. So I was in an art gallery, and then it was called Feelings on a Page, and every piece of art came with a poem, and I performed the poetry at the art gallery.
You have examples of those drawings? Of course, I would.
So one was a mania. Like one mm-hmm. painting was called Mania. Mm-hmm. for example. And I experienced an intensively manic woman in the emergency room. And it was so intense. She was screaming, she was cursing, then she was singing, then she was laughing. And I was just sitting in my office at my desk, and I wrote down all of what she said. It was so erratic. And I had painted this picture of that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the performance, I essentially embodied that energy and acted out that scene. And then it correlated with the visual.
Mm.
And I think it's also very educational. For me, it was therapeutic, but it got people to see how extreme, you know, mm-hmm. mania can present.
Yeah.
And I have one with schizophrenia, and I have one with rape. I have one with alcoholism. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So do you want to perform one of those rap songs for us?
Sure. I can perform a very recent one that I've written.
Okay. This one that I haven't heard.
Do you want a new one?
No, it can be an old one. I just think it would be nice to hear what you do.
Would you like me to perform Cheese Belly?
Sure. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So Cheese Belly, let's talk a little bit about Cheese Belly. So this is a more recent song that has to do with me and my son, who wants royalties on this term because he coined the term cheese belly, which was the belly fat that I have after my kids were born, but it's remained. And and so with his inspiration, I've written a song about how I'm so proud of the cheese belly that I have. And it's a rap.
Okay.
For me, this song has become a part of my daily routine. I do my meditations and I do my cheese belly dance just to get the blood flow. And it's inspired so many other women and other people to feel good about their bodies. It's definitely changed how I feel about my body. And to tie this into my practice, I've noticed a correlation. I don't know if this is researched, but because I work with children and families, I have studied the modality called integrated energy therapy, and I started doing healings specifically on the women if they're interested in that. And I've noticed a correlation between lack of sexual satisfaction in the woman and dysregulation, depression, and anxiety in the children, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so this song is really a song that's healing for the woman to appreciate her body, no matter what, fat, cheese, cellulite, because ultimately that's what it boils down to. It's body love. Self-love is body love. And when you don't have body love, you have self-hate. And then it's really hard to nurture like that. So it is all connected. And so this is why I call my style, I write therapeutic raps.
All right. Love it.
So ready?
I'm ready.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, I'll play it with the backdrop and I'll sing over it because I don't really have a... Don't have a perfect body. I've got lots of cellulite, some from chocolate. I could email you and you could put it up, the song itself.
Yeah, let's try that. Let me hold... Let's hold the record. So that was the interview with Dr. Adina Blickstein. And you're going to hear the rap song that she wrote called Cheese Belly right after this.
Don't have a perfect body. I got lots of cellulite. Some from chocolate, some from baby, some from wear and tear at night. Oh, I tried that belly dancing, leathered all the chia cream. Though it made a freaking mess, I believe now it's a meme. I got my cheese belly, my cheese belly, huh. My cheese belly, my cheese belly, huh. My cheese belly, my cheese belly, huh.
Sexy.
I got my cheese belly. All those magazines, they just mess with your head. Unreasonable for real, my bro. A six pack after bread. What is it they expect? What is it bodies are? But beauty in the minds of society at large. Can we go back in time to year 1655 where the beauty wasn't mama bears, biceps, and white? about my cheese belly, my cheese belly, huh? My cheese belly, my cheese belly, huh? My cheese belly, my cheese belly, huh?
Sexy.
I got my cheese belly. I eat some dairy free while sitting in my chair, cheese belly hanging out. Nope, I don't even care, cause this is my body. This is my cheese, my beauty, my splendor. I look great in bikinis. Abdominal insufficiency. What? Liposuction ain't for me. What? Because I'm perfectly happy. What? I am so cheesy. Jiggle, 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 jiggle. Cheese belly, my cheese belly, huh? My cheese belly, my cheese belly, huh? My cheese belly, my cheese belly, huh?
Sexy.
I got my cheese belly. It ain't easy being cheesy. I got so much attention while I'm driving, while I'm working, while I'm talking. Did I mention people think that I'm pregnant? I say, no, this is my cheese. Don't you ever ask a lady, cause it's none of your bees. Then they get embarrassed. I just stand there and say, you don't congratulate my cheese. I'm just so proud of this thing. I say, I know I am sexy because of my cheese. So if you'd like to dance with me, just be sure to say please. Cheese belly, huh? My cheese belly, my cheese belly, huh?
Sexy.
I got my cheese belly.
Hi, everyone. That was Dr. Adina Blickstein rapping to her latest song, Cheese Belly. I hope that it helped you in terms of body positivity, which is what the song is all about. I hope you enjoyed this interview with Dr. Blickstein. And if you'd like to get in contact with Dr. Blickstein, you can follow her on Instagram. I'm going to leave her contact information in the description so you can connect with her if you'd like. I would love to connect with you as well. So please leave a review. If you enjoyed this episode or other episodes and you want to hear more, please leave a review because that will help us keep this podcast going. And also, any comments or feedback, I would be happy to hear from you. You can also contact me via Instagram, or you can go to my website, which is www.drislabatesmd.com or drislabatesmd.com. And I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, this is Dr. Isla Bates.